in the past, when we've done data platform migrations, an organization usually reevaluates every 5 years. Mm-hmm. They usually install a new tool. There's usually 18 months of pain as they migrate the data across. But to the business, they're like, great, we've got another data platform apparently. And they don't really see like the new capability or the new difference.
Yep.
Moving from a traditional data platform to the modern data platform architecture, we kind of see this as the last time you need to do that 5 year like migration.
Welcome to Deliver Next. I'm your host, Fraser Payne. And today we have a really exciting episode interviewing Jordan Templeton, our CTO. Jordan has over a decade of experience modernizing businesses with a range of technologies, from IoT platforms to connect manufacturing centers and factories, or, you know, monitor entire cities, right through to building data platforms, reporting tools and automations in some of the largest financial institutions in the world. Jordan brings a wealth of knowledge around strategies to adopt these platforms, how to make the right decisions at the right time, how to go through the full migration pattern that's necessary to bring a business on the journey in selecting the right tool and implementing it for the right process at the right time. We talk about a bunch of concrete, real case studies where we've seen this type of impact play out in real world terms. And I think it's just a fascinating conversation, so I hope you enjoy. Hey, Jordan, welcome to Deliver Next.
Happy to be here.
Awesome. Look, I'll just jump right into it. We're going to talk data platforms today in all shapes and forms, but specifically how they're kind of changing the landscape of AI or laying the foundation for AI solutions. But maybe just to get people all on the same page, there's a lot of different names thrown around, from data warehouses to, you know, SQL databases to modern data warehouses, data lakehouses. I could really go on for a while. Yeah. Could you give us some color to that, or maybe give us a few kind of grounding descriptions of what those different terms mean?
Yeah, for the sake of today's discussion, I'm going to talk about two things. One is a data platform, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of using that in the sense of like the legacy data platform. So that's the traditional data warehouse, data marts, big data in general, like those kinds of things. Then I'll also be talking about the modern data platform, which is like a cloud-based lakehouse architecture. It's kind of what we've seen emerging, especially in the last 5 years or so.
Okay, so what is a lakehouse? It sounds like a great place to go on holiday, yep. But what does that mean in a technical context?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. It's a term that was kind of coined as the combination of data warehouse principles, mm-hmm. with a data lake, which is kind of like a place where you can store data in a largely unstructured way.
So it's a hard drive in the cloud. You can throw anything in.
Pretty much. And yeah. So a lakehouse is a way that you can do the unstructured data storage like right. before. But it also now supports patterns for structured data storage as well.
Okay, so you can wrap the structure around it while still having that freeform storage.
Correct.
I suppose the opposite of just dumping everything in there would be a data swamp, maybe, or yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of words people throw around like that.
Sure, that makes sense. Okay, so in terms of how that then meshes with AI, I think we've heard this term AI platform thrown around a fair bit. What are the kind of principles and the differentiators? Is that just a buzzword? Is that just marketing? Or is an AI platform differentiated from a data platform in some way?
In the same way that an organization would invest in a data platform, you know, common governance, security, privacy, common guardrails. Mm-hmm. Also, just having one place to go to get your data, you know, that's a pretty widely accepted system that people invest in today. Mm-hmm. An AI platform has the same type of benefits, you know. Instead of having a bunch of different AI products we have spread out all over our environment, we have one place where we have our models, one place where we have our cost management, our billing, our security, our guardrails. Mm-hmm. And by kind of centralizing all those components, you know, you have a much better chance of being able to productionize use cases because you have a very clear pattern established.
Right. So it's introducing, I guess, that management, that consistency, that governance that you might want in a data platform, but also having that for AI resources. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. So with that consistency then on the AI side of things and the consistency on the data side of things, what does that enable in a practical sense?
Yeah, well, I mean, I see them as being distinctly separate concepts, yes. But they are often talk to each other. They often use each other quite a lot. And so, you know, we can talk about this a bit later, but being able to process data in your data platform using AI, or being able to make wide-scale predictions using AI in your data platform, or from your AI platform querying data from the data platform. So answering natural language questions a person might have, for example.
So the AI learns from your data, but your data is also enriched by the AI.
Exactly.
Awesome. So where does the complexity come in? I guess if I just plug in a hard drive onto my computer, I can dump any data I want on there. Like data storage seems pretty easy. I'm sure there's complexity under the hood, but it seems relatively trivial at the surface level. Why are these, such massive pieces of infrastructure with multi-million dollar transformation budgets and multi-year timelines for implementation? Where is that coming from?
Well, most of the time, if you plugged a hard drive into your computer, you probably couldn't store all the information. Like the volume of data is so much bigger. On top of that, the data is most likely has some kind of sensitive aspect, whether it's kind of commercially sensitive or whether it has personally identifiable information in it. And so generally, it wouldn't be as easy as copying it to your hard drive. But what a modern data platform provides is a consistent way to load data in. And these days, in the modern data platform world, it doesn't really matter if it came from a structured source or an unstructured source. Structured being a database, unstructured being like an API or a CSV or even an image or a video.
Right.
So we have a consistent way to load data in. We have a consistent way to structure it. So all data now becomes structured in some way. And then a consistent way to publish that data, whether it's to reports or any of the other consumers that I talked about before.
Right. And the consistency would be the key word there, that when you're setting standards about how to find this information or how to pass it to an AI model, that it's consistent, it's the same, and you can kind of rely on that behavior for building systems and processes, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then more recently, we've heard this kind of term thrown into the mix of an AI platform. Do you want to give some color to that one? And is it worth differentiating? Is that just marketing, or is there kind of nuance to why throw the word AI into that?
I'll give you my opinion.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, they are two separate things, but they work very closely together. So I feel like most organizations have at least understood the value of a data platform. You know, having data in one place for security and privacy and governance, the one place everybody knows where to go to actually get the data. From an AI point of view, we see a similar kind of need in an organization where we're starting to see every product and every project needing some kind of AI these days. We need a single place to be able to set up the standards for consistent deployment, for consistent cost center billing, for consistent security and privacy, consistent guardrails.
Yep.
And so this concept of an AI platform is an architecture that we believe, provides those capabilities.
Right. So there's that consistent word again, but it's complementary. It's not part of the data platform necessarily. It's orchestration for the intelligence that works with the data.
Yeah, it could be deployed independently, for example, but it would connect to the data platform.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So where are some cases that you do see those two platforms complementing one another? Because I think if we wind the clock back, data platforms have been, maybe it's an overstatement to say a necessary evil, but they've been kind of a cost center to the business. Like you have to have it for audits and reporting and it's better than having people do it by hand, but it's still a cost. It's only very recently that data has become kind of, the new gold or the new oil that's making people money. And it's actually a profit center of the business to sell data or drive optimization with data. How is AI playing a role in that?
Well, I mean, by function of AI becoming good, the more data it has to kind of learn from. So if you take an example of like OpenAI training the GPT models that we all use today, they have literally trillions and trillions of records that go into those models to train them. Yep. If that's not organized in some kind of decent way, there is no way that the models are going to benefit from that.
Yep.
And so the same thing applies in any organization. The better we can organize our data, the better AI will be able to leverage that data for making us more efficient, saving us money, automating tasks, whatever that might be.
Yeah. Playing devil's advocate a little bit, the whole kind of magic of ChatGPT feels like I can just throw anything at it. I can just upload a PDF. I'm like, what's in here? Pull these attributes out or summarize it for me. I don't have to care about structuring it too much. How does that differ when a business is trying to use AI? Because I think naively, I would imagine, hey, I want to set up an HR chatbot. If I just throw these 15 policy documents in a reference set and I tell the chatbot to summarize that for any user question, I feel like that should work. What's the difference between building on that kind of basic scaffold of throwing things in there and seeing how it works versus laying a foundation, having that consistency.
Yeah. There's kind of two things in there though. So the first one is what you said around, I can just throw these documents at a model like ChatGPT, many of the GPT models, and get a pretty good result from that. The model itself is the result of a well-organized data set that trained it in the first place. So let's make sure that we kind of acknowledge that. And so because it's seen such a wide range of organized data in the past, in many various forms of organization, that's why it's so good at being able to kind of deal with, you know, the handful of files I throw at it and can just learn from that.
Yeah.
The second part to this, though, is why can't I just throw my own stuff at the model and not organize it at all? And I would say, you know, there is some value in doing that because there is some tolerance in the models for being able to handle that.
Yep.
But the additional benefit we've seen when you give it well-organized data actually will provide better dividends or remove mistakes. That's right. The other thing. So key example of that might be in the HR policy chatbot, which everybody does, you know, like that's the classic use case.
Yep.
You know, you throw a bunch of these documents at it, or you point it at the SharePoint policy site where your policies are sitting, and it will index those, and that's fine. But what happens if it grabs the wrong version of the policy we're talking about, or it indexes two versions of the same policy?
Mm-hmm.
How can we trust that the correct version is being used in the responses that it's giving? So having a well-organized data platform allows us to avoid situations like that, reduce mistakes, and hopefully increase the precision and the recall, the best response possible.
Sure. Yeah. So it's bringing those kind of data stewardship processes to bear on you know, we've always had to have good quality data in finance and in PII record maintenance and things like that. And if you have that data quality assurance in what your chatbot's talking to, you can be more assured of its response quality.
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, previously in the data warehouse world, we probably wouldn't have considered a call center transcript or an HR policy document as a data source.
Yeah.
But today in the modern data platform world, you can land those transcripts or those documents actually in the lakehouse. They might start off as documents, but they end up as something that the AI can actually leverage in a clean way.
I actually remember in 2016 when we were making some predictive models, we'd just drop all of the free text columns, and it was really cool when we got Word to Vec.
Yeah.
And we could do those basic vector embeddings of words, and it was like free text fields are now actually useful in some capacity, and it's such a long way it's come since those basic embeddings. So that's really cool.
And maybe I'll just add one other thing there.
Yeah.
One of the biggest opportunities I've seen since ChatGPT launched, you know, everybody when they think about ChatGPT or AI in general today, they think about chat, right? They think about the app that I can throw anything at and get a text response back. But in my opinion, and what I've seen with a lot of customers in the last 2 years that we've worked with, is that adding generative AI to process data itself, like as part of the data processing pipeline, that in itself is a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
Because there's opportunities in cleaning up data that is wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
There's opportunities in being able to extract like very nuanced or very complex kind of, you know, reading phone numbers in 10 different formats without having to go and build a parser for that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in a call center transcript, like I said before, being able to determine the difference between is somebody angry at the situation or angry at the agent, because there is a difference.
Yeah.
Or
I love that nuance, actually, because sentiment analysis was always so binary. It's like, are you mad or not? And then you have to make this very general assumption that mad is always bad. But it's like, well, actually, some people are just really impolite and they're mad because they're having a bad day, and it's nothing to do with your process. Yeah, and your call center operator shouldn't get a slap on the wrist for someone else's bad day. Yeah.
So just on that kind of train of thought then, like the idea of using the LLM for data processing actually now enhances the data platform. So when you were looking for cases of where it makes sense to have the AI platform connected to the data platform, that's a prime use case, because now we're consuming the AI model from a safely governed place inside the data platform to produce clean data sets that I can use for many other things.
Yeah. So that's the extract and enrich pattern, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Extending out your ETL.
Yeah.
That's really cool. What are some, I guess we were going into a little bit of case studies there, but what are some really concrete case studies where you've seen this move the needle in an organization or transform a process or open someone's eyes to kind of the broader possibilities of these models?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is kind of what you said before around free text fields.
Mm.
You know, there is a huge amount of value and a huge amount of information locked away in feedback or comments or documents. And we didn't have a really nice way to kind of distill that down into like individual data points. So if we go back to that use case of the call center transcript as an example, you know, there is a huge amount of value in the transcript. Firstly, did we solve the problem? Yes or no? Like that's a very concrete kind of metric you want to measure. Was there an upsell opportunity in the call? That's a very subjective thing that would be very hard to kind of do at scale. The LLM can actually do that quite easily. Was there a upsell opportunity and did they take it? What products you mentioned? You know, being able to kind of link that to other data sets we have around our product list becomes another like opportunity there.
You can even link that to marketing, right? And then have follow-up actions around buyer propensity and emails out.
And so, I think there's a huge opportunity in being able to unlock value from these unstructured kind of text sources. And then similarly, we see the same opportunity now emerging now that these models are multimodal. Now applying that to images, actually just grabbing the audio stream directly. Why do we need to go to the transcript? It could just be audio files in your lakehouse now. So that becomes really interesting for me.
That is quite cool. So I guess extending out on that a little bit beyond, you know, there's the call center. Free text is incredibly rich data. Like it's incredibly high dimensionality. In fact, that's why it was hard to analyze originally. It's just so variable. It's not just a number on a scale of one to a million. It's, you know, there's literally trillions of potential things, even in just a handful of characters, let alone a, you know, 500 character string. How complex is it then to build or orchestrate that pattern? Like, is that something where you can kind of set up a fairly reusable pipeline and then you can apply it to every free text field? Or are you building that from scratch every time? If an organization was looking to say, hey, let's level up our reporting, all the free text is now free game. We've got these, we've got 100 different free text columns in different tables across our data kind of lakehouse warehouse. How should they reason or strategize about adding that value?
Well, the beauty is, and in the same case we said before, that the LMs are very tolerant to all sorts of different organized or unorganized kind of data. It's a very low overhead to enable this on your existing free text today. And so if you want to do something simple like detecting a product name that was mentioned in customer feedback. You know, people post reviews. You want to ingest those reviews into your lakehouse. You want to organize that into a report that shows us, you know, is there positive or negative reviews, you know, against our products. But you want to have a dimension there of like, what products are they talking about? Then that is actually really easy to do. And in the same way that we would write a prompt in ChatGPT to, I don't know, generate the marketing material for a product, I could write that same prompt to say, I want to extract product names from my product list out of these reviews. And you can give it some business rules. You can give it a bit of nuance in there to help it be a better at selecting those things. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to being clear with the prompt and the extraction rules.
Okay. So it's just it's really a new tool in the tool belt for existing data engineers. It doesn't need to be a whole AI project. It's it's like a step in your ETL. It's part of the transform.
That's right. And what's amazing is the pace at which these tools are being developed. So even within all of the leading data platform tools today, I'm not going to talk about any specific product. They all now usually have some kind of AI library that you can leverage from the data platform. And so it's as simple as just going AI.process. You give it a prompt in the column and that's it.
Okay, so changing tact a little bit from enriching data in the warehouse and looking more, I guess, at downstream applications, where are some ways that you've seen usage of AI in combination with the data platform change a process more meaningfully? So not just the analytics or the decision-making or the insight side of things, but the operational side of things.
Yeah, this is where it helps to have your data well described. And so there are a lot of tools in the modern data platform architecture today. The role is it's called like a catalog. And these usually sit inside the data platform and they describe what the tables are, where they are, and what data is in those tables. So kind of like what the data means. And that gives the model the ability to actually understand when I'm writing a query or getting into that data, I know what to actually apply business like logic to. And so applying this in a, maybe we'll put a use case around this. Let's say, for example, in a sales context, we want to understand, you know, what were our sales quarter on quarter, and then do a bit of a loss review across maybe some opportunities that we had lost in that quarter. And so this is an opportunity where the data is sitting in the lakehouse, mm-hmm. well described with the catalog there.
Yeah.
We then have the agent that we're talking to in our AI platform, and it is going to talk to the data platform to run a query and retrieve that information. And then I might use that to then make some business decisions.
Yeah.
And so I would ask that question, you know, what were our sales quarter on quarter? I would also ask it to then do a bit of a loss review. Mm-hmm. And initially, like, we didn't really have an easy way to dynamically generate these queries.
Yeah.
We probably would have had a loss review report that would have had some common causes, but I can't drill down into that with human language and try to understand it more deeply.
Yeah, you need to write SQL or DAX or some other.
Exactly. It'll end up on a dashboard and there'll be a table of things, and I'd have to read that and decide. Yeah. Whereas now, and this happened in another conversation in the podcast I was having around MCP, but imagine that there is a way for me to query my data platform from my agent.
Mm-hmm.
And because it understands what my data is and what it means, it can actually go and execute that query and come back with a meaningful result. It can do further analysis, and I can drive that as the person, as the human in the loop. I can actually give it further instructions to give me more relevant details. Because reports are good, you know, we still need them for making the world run. But people usually have follow-on questions, and often those reports don't answer those questions.
Yep.
And so this is where having the AI platform and the agent in front of the data platform now allows me to answer those questions.
Properly self-service data analytics. Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome. So if you were talking to a customer or you're talking to an organization, they've got basic lay of the land, they've got a lot of data, it's pretty maybe reasonably well-structured, but it's coming from a lot of different sources. It's fairly entrenched on, let's say, MS SQL Server on-prem kind of stuff. They haven't made a major advancement in the last 5-10 years. How would you say they could catch up? Like, what are the steps they can take? Because it feels like such a massive gap between that, where things were only a decade ago, which is actually not that long ago in real time, but an eon in AI time.
Yeah.
Catching all the way up to this kind of modern data platform, that complete flexibility, that open-ended file format to store videos, images, and stuff, and index them, and integrate them, and report on them. And it sounds like so many steps to take. How do you consolidate that?
I'll give you two perspectives on this.
Mm-hmm.
One is I would challenge and say, you know, in the past when we've done data platform migrations, an organization usually reevaluates every 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They usually install a new tool. There's usually 18 months of pain as they migrate the data across. But to the business, they're like, great, we've got another data platform apparently. And they don't really see like the new capability or the new difference.
Yep.
Moving from a traditional data platform to the modern data platform architecture, we kind of see this as the last time you need to do that 5-year like migration.
Okay.
We see this as being you move to this modern architecture, which is now a lot more modular and a lot more kind of like building blocks. And as new capabilities come out in the market, for example, a new lakehouse format, you just migrate the lakehouse format to the new one. Obviously, there's a little bit of, you know, work in there.
Yeah.
But you're not fundamentally replacing the whole platform.
Yeah.
So you're kind of upgrading in stages as you go. It kind of evolves over time, as opposed to a full migration, which is really painful, which you do every couple of years, and you haven't necessarily enabled a lot of new capability. You've just kind of upgraded to the new license because the old one was being deprecated, you know?
Sure.
So that's kind of the first thing that I would look at is I would challenge and say, there is an investment to kind of get onto the modern data platform architecture.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it in phases and stages, and you can kind of make that migration work. And, you know, there are vendors in the market who have IP to kind of help with that process.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say that wasn't an option in the short term and you wanted to get started sooner. The second perspective is that you can actually turn on a lot of these modern data platform tools in the cloud, and many of them actually have features to sync or to mirror like an on-premises data platform.
Right.
And so in that case, you take your existing SQL Server that's on-prem with all your antiquated business rules that are really hard to unpick,
mm-hmm.
and nobody wants to touch it because, you know, it works.
Yep.
We can actually mirror that to the cloud-based data platform,
yep.
which is a modern data platform.
Yep.
And that then gives you the ability to leverage all of the same like AI tooling and all these things like the data agent or the you know, the way to kind of naturally query that data with.
So just mirroring the data, not migrating all of the logic and all of the underlying, like that kind of complexity, that usual spaghetti or rat's nest of logic. Yeah.
Yeah. So to be clear, I'm an advocate of moving to the modern data platform and unpicking that stuff.
Sure.
But if that's not an option, mirroring is a great way to get started right now.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So in terms of the decisions to be made there, you've just given two, but I'm assuming there's actually 1,000. Maybe I'm even understating it with 1,000. There's so many different dials to tune. I know, you know, when I've done basic deployments of these things, just the initial config takes a while. Then you realize that's switching it on in the first place. And then you go into the config dashboard and then you realize, you know, did you pick this SKU or that one? And how much compute do you want? And what's your cost management? Is there any way to simplify that down? Are there best practices? Is there some kind of like opinionated framework maybe, or just kind of standard set of things where it's nice to have the freedom to make those choices and to configure it in those different ways, but ultimately for 99% of people, there's a pretty straight path to the right option?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to use Microsoft frameworks as an example. We are heavily Microsoft as a partner, but Microsoft have had some standards called landing zones for a while.
Yeah.
And so platform landing zone is very much about establishing your cloud environment, but there are also data and AI landing zones as well. Right. And so these are reference architectures that say, you know, you want to do a cloud data platform and you want to do it at the, you know, enterprise level or the small, medium business kind of level, depending on your security and whatever requirements. Mm-hmm. Here is a reference architecture you can use straight away with a recommended set of SKUs, you know, licensing and whatever that might be. So I would say those are a great kind of basis to start from. And what's interesting is that they have that for data platform, but they also have that for the AI platform. So we're actually seeing that concept of this AI platform as a distinct kind of asset inside the business or a system in the business. It's being recognized now by a lot of these larger like hyperscalers who are building tools on those AI platforms.
Cool. Okay, that's great. So people do want to get started with that. They can look into landing zones. I assume they can reach out to you or HSO in general.
Yep.
We've always got strong opinions.
That's right. We're very opinionated.
Yep. That's awesome. Do you have any closing bits of advice, any kind of last comments or suggestions of where people might want to look for more information on any of this if it's piqued their interest?
I would say start small. Mm-hmm. And the idea is not to just throw all your data at the AI. And so if you can actually expose a small subset of your data, then enable the AI to sit over the top and start to answer some questions about that. That's a great way to kind of build capability inside the technical team, as well as show some early wins to the business. And putting some constraints around it is always good. You know, you want to kind of ease into it. And then in terms of getting started, obviously there's the Microsoft Learn resources for landing zones. Mm-hmm. You can also check out our HSO website for our offerings. I'm more than happy to kind of talk on that too.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for joining us and appreciate you helping us deliver next.
No problem.
Cheers.
Thanks.